whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Brought to you by Rock Antenna, Germany's number one rock radio station.
Great to meet you guys.
Yeah, nice.
So, brand new album comes out 28th of February, The Sky, The Earth, and All Between. How was the process of making that album for you?
It's really fun. I really enjoyed it. And we worked really hard together, the me, Dan, and Jordan. And I think on your 11th album, it has to be pretty special to sort of pass the checks that we put in place. But we're really proud of it. And we had a good time recording it. And so far, so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny place to be trying to write your 11th album. And like Sam says, the bar has to be so high. And we definitely, after our previous record came out, our difficult 10th album came out, we had a clear sort of intention to take the band to the next level, if you like, which is, you know, not an easy thing to do when you've been doing it for such a long time, but we definitely felt like we had another gear. That was perhaps made harder by losing our guitarist. So we had to sort of reestablish a new creative dynamic in the band. I've always kind of had this belief that if you put your mind to something and you believe in yourself and you trust yourself and those around you, then you can achieve what you set out to do. And so it was never like a worry. It was like, we're going to make this album. I don't know how, but we will make this album. And it kind of like materialized exactly as we imagined, I think.
Yeah. How long did you work on it? Like in total?
I mean, we were sort of like, there was a good year of sort of figuring out how, you know, we worked on Seeing Red. I was like getting to grips with writing guitar because I hadn't done that before. And so we had sort of these scattered ideas. And then once Jordan came along, that's when like we started putting everything together really quickly. So we had a short writing session with him, and
we all had three done in the first one, and then
one of those didn't make the album. But then, you know, the first day we got together, we wrote Curse, and then we did a longer writing session, like a 3-4 weeks together. And we got a bunch more, and then we had this feeling that we were missing, like there was something missing from the album. We wanted to write this like insane heavy song, which turned out to be Black Hole, the third track. So which actually was like took the longest, I think because it was the last track, we it was like, it has to be so good to be on this album now, because we've got 11 songs and there's good songs on here, so like what's the point in like adding an additional average song? So the bar was really high. We wrote about 7 choruses, didn't we?
I think also because with that, you don't want to just have a song just for the sake of it, just that the album felt so strong anyway, that when we were like, we need a really heavy song, it needed to be really good and really heavy, not just a placeholder song.
That chorus was a tough one to crack, wasn't it? Because when you write such an extreme song, to tastefully include like a big chorus, it can be so jarring in mood. And so to find a way to make the aesthetic of those two components mix in a nice, tasteful way is really tricky. Because we're actually like, a lot of the song was there. I already had like the majority of the song, the riffs and stuff were already there. I remember I bought that to that writing session. I played it and Jordan was like, have you got anything else?
It's good. Good stuff.
I was like, no, this is the song. We're doing this song. Anyway, it turned out great in the end. I think he would admit that now. It's always a long process, because you write and you take it away. You consider, how can we improve? What can we change? And like lyrically, it's a lot like of spontaneous writing in the moment and then taking it away and then trying to fine tune the meaning or the sentiment, and, you know, trying. That's a real part. All that takes time.
So. Meanwhile, me and Jordan are getting obsessed with the placeholder lyrics, yeah. And then we have to get our head around it. But it's just, especially with writing lyrics, you can't just have somebody just pull it up straight away and get it perfect. I think actually quite a lot of this album, Dan did seem to pull quite a lot out that stayed, but there was obviously some where it needed a bit more.
I think the danger when you're writing really spontaneously with lyrics and it's all happening really fast is like you're diluting meaning, or like you can throw in a line that doesn't really mean anything, you know. Or and sometimes you can listen back and go, oh, I see how that line that I did just make them, what kind of actually does relate to what I'm trying to say here. But there was also times when I'm like, guys, this line doesn't mean anything, and they're like, yeah, but we love it, you know. So that was
we were having to be like, no, it means this, and Dan's like, it literally doesn't.
So but it meant that the lines that I then brought in later had to, it, again, the bar's really high, because it's not just about the meaning, it's like phonically it's got to sit really nicely, it's got to be this many syllables, it's, you know, it is a jigsaw puzzle. So that took time, but generally it was a fun and pretty slick process, wasn't it?
Do you then sometimes have to stop yourselves thinking, okay, this is good now, we take this?
No, it never, there's a like an emotion in you, which is, it's so hard to describe, it's so hard to know how to get there, but there's just a certain feeling that me, Dan and Jordan have, and all songwriters have, when you finally crack the code, which is just this feeling of like, just insane happiness and almost giddiness and joy.
It's a buzz.
Yeah, so it's like a high. So we knew that every song had to hit that. And we weren't just going to settle for okay. As we said on the 11th album, it needed to have that factor, and not kid ourselves if we felt like we were close, because it's easy, your brain goes like, no, this is it, and then everyone in the room goes, yeah, maybe it is it, oh yeah, it's it, because it's easier to go, yeah, it's it, and in your head you're like,
we yeah. worked all day, please be it.
And your brain knows that you're lying, and then eventually one of you goes, I think we can do better.
I think what's, you can sort of see as our band's grown, it's taken more for us to get drunk on that buzz. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So like very early, it would be like, we've written a song. It starts and there's a middle and there's an end. Like, it's actually like a song. Like, we've actually managed to make a song. It's like, well, is it good? Well, I don't really care, because we've actually just managed to write a song, you know? And so the quality really early on, like, just wasn't the same as it is now, because we weren't setting the bar as high. We were just happy to be in a room and be able to, like, we've made something out of nothing, and that was an achievement to us. So as we've grown, it's taken more and more for us to get excited, and so the quality has to get higher and higher. And the other thing is, we're so deep in our career, and like, yeah, if a new band released this album, we would be like the most hyped band, a heavy band on the planet. If a new band came out with this album, people would be like, have you heard this new band, Architects? It's insane. But because it's our 11th album, it's like, Architects, we've got a new album. This better be good. Otherwise, we're not going to bother listening to it. So it's like a very different challenge for us than what it used to be, or what it is for newer artists.
Yeah, you're very ambitious as a band. And in a former interview, you said, I did a bit of research, of course. Yeah. You wanted to make this album the record, you wanted to fulfill kind of your full potential.
Yeah. Mm.
And in this interview, you said you work best when you, Sam, are pissed off.
Mm. Or I sound pissed off, yeah.
Well, I listened to the tracks. What in the name of God did you do to him? It was amazing.
Yeah. No, I think bringing Jordan in has been good. I think also just kind of the last 2 years of touring our records, or our big history, you know, we've kind of, you know, last time we were in Germany, we were doing very long shows where we were doing like quite a lot of historical songs of the band. You really fall in love with your band and what's special about your band. And I think people really enjoy hearing me be pissed off. Not all the time, but I think there's something about, you know, I was an angry kid. I was pissed off a lot. That fire is still in me. It's always been in me. It always will be in me.
It was burning.
Yeah. And I think playing live is such a great way of getting that out of me. I think everybody wishes they could kind of go and yell. And, you know, people have been doing it for years. You know, people were like the John Lennon and fucking used to go and scream at the sea. And sorry.
No worries. I'm swearing myself.
So like there's just letting that scream out of you is good. And I think even if people can't do it, when they're listening to it, they feel that anger and they feel that emotion. And I think that's what's good about our band is not just that. It's feeling the sorrow and feeling the energy that flows throughout the song. So whether it's me yelling and really being intense, or whether it's me, you know, singing very sadly about situations, people just want that escape through music. And that's what people do, or whether they're listening to something happy and they feel joyous, or classical music or metalcore or whatever, you're feeling something. It's an escape. And I think what people use our band for is to, I don't know, that sort of sad hope. I don't know how the best to describe it.
I feel like heavy music appeals to people, particularly because it is very hard to find a safe place to experience anger, and to a degree sadness as well. And like, obviously those are like
quite
the,
similar.
Those, yeah, those are like the two sort of defining emotions of the band, probably. And you know, I sort of realized at some point that, particularly when I was in my early 20s, when, you know, the band was really taking shape, that, like, you know, I wasn't like an outwardly angry guy. But then people would always say, I can't believe this. You know, people that didn't know what I did would check out the band and be like, I can't believe you play in this band. Like, I would never guess that you would play in this band. But it's like, I just wasn't brought up in a space where I could be angry and it was okay. And so there's something about heavy music where you it resonated with you because there was something in you that was dying to get out that you couldn't get out. And what Sam is great at doing is like expressing like pure rage, you know. And more and more people need these like extremes in order to feel what is inside of them, you know, as we're more and more distracted, phones, work, family, you know, life is so, you almost like close up shop, you know. And so you need something powerful to suck that back out of you, you know. So I think with this album we realized like we really need to, part of the album really need to lean into that, you know, because that was like something that people connected with it in our band. And you know, we know there's a lot of like angry young people out there that don't have healthy outlets for their anger. And yeah, I hope, you know, I think heavy music is a healthy tool for those people.
I think also in terms of like, what did they do to you in the studio? I actually just gave me a lot of praise. I think in those situations, I just work better under like a pat on the back. Like, I think I'm just like being like, that's great. And then if someone says that, you're like, okay, cool, right, I'm going to do it even more.
You just have permission to express that.
And like here listening to, I listened to the stems of the second verse in Whiplash the other day, because that vocal is so aggressive. But I remember tracking it and us just like having a, like, it sounds so intense and it sounds like they've really rolled me up. But I know I would have just been sat there and then done the take and then turned around and been like, it's good. And then us laughing at how ridiculous it is, because it just gets like more angry and more angry and more angry. And like in particular, like the end of the line, we're like preaching to the scum. It's, you can hear my mouth. You can hear the rage, yeah. But I know I would have just finished that take and be like, sounds good. You know, like it's like Dan says, like you wouldn't think that it would come out. I mean, when people know me, they're like, of course that's you.
Your wife.
Yeah. Like, they're like, of course you're mad. But like, you know, people that just meet you, they're like, oh, what? How is that you? You're like, you're just walking your dog. Like the people that I see when I walk my dogs, yeah, would be like, what the hell?
And yeah, like I was saying, people would be surprised that I play in this heavy band because I just seem like a fairly like calm guy. But
walking around with your kids.
I've just been conditioned as a child to be good at masking how I really feel, you know.
And the sadness and anger is very similar. I think it especially the thing that I really know in my life is my anger is a protection for my sadness. I would rather not feel sad, so that anger will come in and take control of that. So that's what you sort of, you get the best of both within our band.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah, very sad world.
Well, talking about emotions, with every release of an album or a track, you, like, on the internet, you have all the opinions,
yeah,
at once. You have, like, happy fans, you have sad fans, you have maybe pissed off fans. Yeah. How do you deal with that?
I don't deal with it anymore, which is nice, because I just can't. I'm too sensitive when it comes to our band. And in a weird way, you know, there can be 1,000 nice comments that don't mean anything to me, but the one comment will stick with me for the week, you know, and it really will stick with me. So I now don't read our comments. I don't have any engagement with them. I appreciate people that do put positive stuff in there, but I leave it to other people. And on my personal page, I just don't have it unless it's friends, you know. And I think you have to understand your own boundaries of like what makes you work and what doesn't. And for me, I just trust my friends and what they say and the people that are around us. And I'm
there's no consideration in the creative process.
Exactly.
That's the thing. Like you can go in with the intention of being like, oh, we won't do this too much because we'll get, you know, we'll upset people or whatever. And then you go into the studio and you're like, like the wind catches your sails on a certain song. And actually what I find our band does is we end up like leaning into the further into it, like this, you know, like you listen to Everything Ends and it's like we did not make that song thinking about our fans.
No.
Like we, because like we know that that will make lots of our fans irate. But there's, you just have to, the creative process is just like about following the buzz and the excitement and what is making us excited and what we're getting, you know, inspired out of. And so we just go with that flow.
I don't think any artist is necessarily safe in the comment world. You know, I still see what other people go through. I see what my favorite bands go through. There's a lot of angry people in the world, and I get it. But like, I don't know a single person that would leave comments or horrible comments, you know, and
forever as well. Like,
yeah,
I saw that there's that Bob Dylan movie coming out with Timothy Chalamet is playing Bob Dylan, and I saw an interview. I think it was the one he did with Zane Lowe, and I think Timothy's talking about doing it, having a phone conversation, I think, with a biographer for Bob Dylan. He says like, I hope Bob Dylan fans like what I've done with the character. And the guy's like, Tim, Bob Dylan fans don't even like what Bob Dylan does.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that. Right. You're like, it is like that. It gets to the point where you're just like, that's a separate thing. Like, and it what that will be what it'll be. I think we've learned along the way that quality is what matters. Styles can change. And you know, like we learned when we did Animals, like as long as it's good, yeah, we'll be okay. And you just have to be tough enough to withstand the abuse.
If not, which hide.
We're not tough enough.
Yeah.
But we do, as we've just said, like we wrote Everything Ends and we're like buzzing, like this song, great. As soon as the song was mastered, I was like, oh, we got to release this song. Well, we're going to get absolutely killed.
It's also one of those things, like one of my friends said to me, he was like, when it came to me just being like, I'm not reading this, it's like, you don't sign up for that in a band. You don't start a band and be like, right, I want every single person's opinion on me as soon as I wake up. You don't have to go through that. Some people do. I did for a long time. But that then starts to form your opinion of yourself, which is just horrible, because it's just, I'm just wired in that way. And I don't need that. And I feel so much happier without having it. Even if like right now it would all be really positive. I don't need it. As long as I'm happy with myself and I'm happy with what the band's doing, then if people want to come and enjoy that, come and enjoy it.
Now it's gotten to the point with me that we've gotten so popular off the back of all this negativity towards us. Like the more abuse we get, the bigger the band gets. So now when we get too much praise, I'm like, is this too positive? Is this going to be bad? You know? Yeah, it's like the whole internet feedback thing is a very like confusing and distorting space, and so we tend to just look at the numbers.
Yeah, it's when you realize it's not just you, it's just the internet. It's like you know, in a breakup, it's like it's not me, it's actually you.
It's changed though, hasn't it? I think the last 10 years, you know, we've been around long enough, and obviously, like when we started, there wasn't even social media, but it seems like a harsher world now on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Linkin Park when they came back and they did the show, and Emily was the first time she came out and she was singing, and I was watching it and I was like, I cannot believe how good she sounds, and like how good it is. The pressure, like the whole world is watching you right now, and you are delivering an unbelievable vocal performance regardless of the situation. But with this situation happening, I'm blown away. As somebody that freaks out sometimes and has moments, and I was like, everybody must be like, this is unbelievable. This is gold. You know, I've got like however many years of experience of singing. If I'm saying this, surely the internet is. And the comments were insane, like so horrible, just for the sake of it. And I was like, you know nothing. You know absolutely nothing. You can't even, as somebody that has been touring for this many years, played festivals, I felt pressure. I can't even imagine what that pressure felt like. And she just fucking bossed it. And that was the moment where I literally went, I don't care anymore. I don't care what any of you think anymore. I'm going to trust my gut, and I'm going to trust everyone that I know's gut. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. Well, you just mentioned Linkin Park. You're going to support Linkin Park next year.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
It's an amazing, amazing feeling for us to have it. And I think...
I love getting offered stadium gigs.
Yeah, it's nice. We did Metallica, and that was unbelievable. And then you sort of think at the end of that, you're like, wow, what an amazing opportunity.
Who's the next biggest rock act of the last 30 years? Well, we'll go over there with Linkin Park. Okay, we'll go that, we'll do that one.
I have a checklist.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Do this.
It's like every band that you've loved growing up all of a sudden is like, do you want to go on tour with us? And you're like, yes, absolutely.
We were waiting for the call.
Yeah.
Did you get a call?
Our agent called me and was like, are we doing anything next summer? I was like, we're not supposed to be. He's like, what about Linkin Park and stadiums? I was like, yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah. It's crazy. Linkin Park has been such a massive part of all of our childhoods growing up and being around it. And yeah, just what they did for sort of alternative music. Now, you see bands like Bring Me and you see bands like Sleep Token and all these other bands climbing up festival bills. The first people to really do that kind of crossover into metal, pop, aggressive vocals in a chorus was them, really, for our generation. And I think probably the biggest influence on my singing voice and singing coming into Architects and that kind of pitched vocals. So yeah, and now this era of where they're at with Emily, and I love that record. And yeah, I think it's going to be nice for us to play, because Metallica was amazing, but I don't think a lot of people there would have loved me screaming my head off for a bit.
They didn't have it was an honor to do those Metallica shows, but a lot of Metallica fans are like, what on earth is this?
Yeah.
Whereas some, not all, but like a good amount of our songs would make sense to Linkin Park fans. So,
and I think I've definitely seen a lot of our fans and a lot of Linkin Park fans being like, this is amazing, like this crossover, because like as Dan said, it's been a long time coming.
Metallica fans will kill me for saying this, but Linkin Park are like the Metallica of the 2000s. Mm. In terms of the size and the record sales and the success of it, I mean, like, you look on Spotify, I think it's like 54, 55 million monthly listeners. That is unbelievable numbers. Like, that's, you know, like getting up to like, you think of like Coldplay doing that sort of stuff, you know, it's mind blowing, really.
I think for Metallica fans as well, I mean, it was an amazing opportunity. And I mean, the actual reactions, I still can't believe some of the reactions we had, because it was, you're in a stadium and you're getting cheered off and you hear horror stories of some bands. But I think we were probably quite extreme for some of those people.
Funny getting a hero's welcome. Like, because we're playing in the center of the stadium with Metallica, we have to enter the stadium, right? And they like separate the crowd. You walk in to get, it's like walking into the ring for like a boxing match or like a UFC match, you know? And like, everyone's like cheering us in, high-fiving us. Like, do you even know who we are? You know? But it was such a fun, like, we're all just laughing because it's, you know, funny. And we just feel like imposters, but it was a super cool experience. I mean, it's worthwhile us zooming out sometimes and actually like thinking about like the things we get to do and the things that we are, where we are in our lives.
These are that and Linkin Park are definite moments where you realize quite how ridiculous this is, where you're just like, how has it got to this point? And you think back over everything, and yeah, it's just a really nice moment for everyone involved in it.
I've spent so much time in our career, like feeling like, well, I want to push the band, get, you know, like, want to keep, I want to do this forever. Do you know what I mean? And like, you have to keep pushing because you need money to live, you know, I've got kids and mortgage. And more recently, I've just sort of had this realization that I'm just happy to be in the game.
Mm.
Do you know, I'm just happy to be doing this. Like, it's just such a privilege to like live in this lifetime to have been able to do this, you know. Yeah. It's such a journey, you know. It's such an amazing thing.
It really is. I think, without oversharing too much, I got diagnosed with ADHD this year.
Oh, there we go.
And I did all these tests with people, and it was like I got told the percentage of people that have ADHD, like myself, in the country, I was in like a top percentage. And the woman that spoke to me was like, most people that have this level of ADHD either end up in prison or without a job.
You're doing great.
Yeah, yeah. And she was like, the fact that you have found music and you found this thing is unbelievable. And that was a moment where I was like, we really have done so much as a band, but it still feels as amazing. You know, it's not taken for granted. Because we've never had this like mammoth success overnight, the journey keeps going and it keeps being exciting. And like something like this, like, yeah, it's just, it feels as exciting as if like a band's first tour, you know, like, wow, how is this?
Kind of gather fans like along the way.
Yeah.
Myself, I've been a fan since Daybreaker.
Yeah, amazing.
So it was like, I had the talk with my mom and she was like, is this a phase? Why are you hearing this music? I was like, it's not a phase, mom. And spoiler, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So it's like 11 albums. That's impressive. Do you sometimes listen to your like first albums?
I will occasionally go back and will, like, it's normally around us releasing songs, or I will go back and have a little, be like, oh, I remember this, and like, it is wild. I don't normally go back too far. I've definitely listened to Daybreaker, not in full, but bits of Daybreaker, and been like, it's amazing that we're here. I watched like a tour documentary that we did when we toured with Rise Against around that time, and that was a lot of the songs we were touring at that time. But it is amazing, like when we did that tour with Rise Against, I remember being like, I can't imagine what it would be like to be an arena band.
Yeah.
And now we're an arena band in Germany. It's
stressful.
Very stressful. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like such a unlikely story, and that we know it around Daybreaker. It felt like I had this feeling that we were past it, that we had missed our shot, because that was our fifth record. And that feels like Metallica's fifth record was the Black Album, and we were still sort of treading water, you know what I mean? And there was a small audience, but I mean, I met my now wife when we were finishing up Daybreaker cycle, and I was earning £300 a month. She was like, okay, well, five albums, £300 a month, you know, like £3,600 a year living with my parents, you know, like, it's not great.
Fancy it.
So, I mean, it's a story of perseverance for sure. I just felt like we never even imagined there was another option. You know, like there was never a conversation. Are we going to carry on? Is this it? You know, it was never with the band. You know, we did pretty poorly for well over 10 years. Our guitarist died. We've lost another guitarist more recently. We've never once had the conversation about ending.
Yeah.
It's never been we've never even discussed it for a moment. Like, it's not even been a thought. It's, you know, the band has never even been close to becoming to an end, even though we ought to have, you know. Yeah. And, you know, like, there's certain circumstances that have meant that we've been able to carry on. And I've seen other bands who are great bands, and they're sort of not, it's just not quite happening for them. And I've said to them, you know, just hang in there, like keep quality over time. It will eventually, you will get the audience. You've just got to keep going, you know. And all of them, all the ones that I can think of right now, have ended it, you know, have given up. Given up is harsh. It just gets to the point where it's like, oh, we have to make money to live, you know.
It's funny, we saw Tim from Rise Against recently in America, and it was the first time that we'd seen him since we toured with them over here.
12 years.
And we had such a good time with them. We got on so well with them, but it was, you know, when they were such a big band, it's like, you don't really, we became really good friends with Touche Amore. You stay in contact with them, you see them everywhere, but Rise Against, we hadn't seen. And I saw Tim, and he just came over, he gave me a massive hug, and he was like, I'm so happy for you guys. Like, it's so cool to see what you guys are doing and what you've done since then. It's like, you're like, fuck, since then, Tom was there on that tour, then since then we've like had all these albums, and we've not
57 albums,
yeah. And then like to see them and us still be like hitting it off, and since then been in contact, and like, just, yeah, it's amazing. Even just from then,
I felt like when we saw Tim the other day, it felt like when we knew him 12 years ago, when we met them 12 years ago, we were like the kids, the yeah. students, and then seeing him again after that time, it was like, oh, now we're peers.
Yeah,
you know,
crazy.
So what would your advice be for maybe young aspiring musicians or bands? Do you have anything to say? for an ending question, something difficult.
Honestly, set the bar as high as possible creatively, and don't be prepared to settle, and, you know, keep pushing and pushing and pushing until you feel that you've reached your absolute capacity for quality. You know, like, you know, we've released 11 albums. Part of that is there was many years when we weren't focused on enough, you might say, on quality. Probably the reason I was earning £300 a month is that there wasn't quite enough focus on quality. There's so much music out there. It's very noisy. It's very hard to get people's attention, even for us, you know. So as a new artist, to get people's attention, you've got to do something. You've got to aim for exceptional. So focus on that.
Yeah, and I would do that before you start doing the TikToks and the Instagram world. Like, nail your songs first, because I think so much of the music industry now is so focused on TikTok, Instagram, building up this world, which is fine, but have the songs first, because that's what it will break down to.
All right, granddad.
I know. Do that stuff, but like, do that world. Like, I'm not saying don't do TikTok, but just like Dan said, like, make sure the stuff that you're putting out there is quality first, because you wouldn't want someone to just brush past something. You know, if you're going to do stuff like that, your shot of making it is so much better if you're, you know, giving them gold.
Yeah, I think you've got to be brutal with yourself in terms of, you know, like, I think for us, we felt like, oh man, we've written a song, like, it's cool, like, the song's cool, and but then, you know, oh, is it as good as, you know, like, name any huge, massive, iconic song? You know, weigh yourself up against those songs. Is it Sandman? Yeah. Is it Everlong? Is it Basket Case? Is it, you know, whatever, like, whatever style you're doing, like, how does it weigh up against the greats? Why not aim to be at that level? You know, you might not quite make it, but, like, aim high. If you aim lower, as we did for a long time, and we were okay with that at the time, do you know what I mean? Like, we wanted to write a song that was as cool as 43% Burnt by the Dillinger Escape Plan, which is a cool song, do you know what I mean? But there's aiming for greatness takes you somewhere else.
I think a lot of people think it's easy to just, like, go viral and do well by, like, well, what, they've got big off TikTok, so why don't we do this? Or they've got big off that. It's like, those people have got big off TikTok because the song was really good. That's why it's gone big. Yeah. It's not because of the video edit or whatever. You can't just chuck anything out there. So yeah, just write the best songs in the world and you'll be fine.
This is a very good last sentence for the interview. Thank you so much.
And if when you figure it out, let me know as well.
Very nice. Thank you guys so much.
Whole lot of talk, the interviews that rock. Subscribe to our channel for more rocking podcasts.